This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It was in the western French city of Nantes, right in the very center of the city. Police moved in just after dawn and cleared out some 450 migrants. There were quite a few males there. There were quite a few unaccompanied minors and women who were traveling on their own.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Paris. We'll have full details on this migrant story coming up.
Also, Ethiopia's new prime minister wants to pursue multi-party democracy in the country. A suicide bomber killed up to 8 people during morning prayers today at a mosque in northeast Nigeria. And the Al-Shabaab terror group carried out a raid this morning on a Somali military base.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the reformist new prime minister of Ethiopia, Abiy Ahmed, keeps pushing the bar. Yesterday he was quoted as saying Ethiopia has no option but to pursue multi-party democracy, and that is in Africa's second most populous nation that for decades has been ruled by a single coalition. To shed light on the matter, we have in studio VOA Horn of Africa service, Salamone Abate. Welcome, Salamone.
Thank you, Yehiz, and thank you, Kim, for having me.
You're welcome.
Multi-party democracy in Ethiopia. Is it at all possible?
Why not? Ethiopia is one of the oldest countries in the world, as all know, with a rich experience of governance and civilization. And the people of Ethiopia showed that it's well conversant with the ideology or the idea of democracy. So it is possible to have a multi-party system in the country, provided that the dominant party, the ruling party, allows to exercise that right.
Well, over the past 27 years, opposition parties in the country have been made to be weak, some neutralized, some eliminated. So how does this scenario going to play in terms of this multi-party democracy concept?
Well, this talk of multi-partyism is not new for Ethiopians or in Ethiopia. We saw in the past 27 years when the EPRDF rule was in the country, so but the problem is, the main problem is that the party preferred to take the path of dictatorship and try to discourage the parties to exercise freely. And most of the leaders of these parties were either arrested or forced to flee the country. That is the problem, that the country couldn't have a proper multi-party system. But now, as you mentioned earlier, the new reformist, that was
the
a good,
prime minister.
That is a good characterization, yeah. A prime minister with new ideas is promising to provide more floor for the opposition parties. He doesn't even call them opposition parties. He calls them competitors. To give them more floor to participate in the political atmosphere.
So does he have the backing of his own party?
That is something we'll have to wait and see. You know, most of Ethiopians are still skeptic about the nature of the party. Some even say still it is, you know, the will of this reformist prime minister. But there are a lot of people in the party that showed their support to this prime minister. Leaders of, for instance, the Amhara wing and the Oromia wing. And the others also expressed their support to the prime minister, but we still don't know how the vast part of the party, the governing front, react to the prime minister's moves. So that will be something that we'll wait and see.
It's a work in progress. So,
yeah.
And finally, Salomon, what should we expect when Prime Minister Abiy visits Washington at the end of this week?
Yeah, he will be here in Washington, D.C. On Thursday in 2 or 3 days for almost a week-long visit. And he will be here in Washington, D.C., and in Los Angeles and in Minnesota. He will speak to large gatherings of Ethiopians and Ethiopian Americans, and he will talk to community leaders and religious leaders, political activists, and others, intellectuals. So he will have really a busy week. It is very exciting week for Ethiopians in America, and it will be exciting for himself because this is a trip. He planned to talk to Ethiopians. This is not a state visit to the United States. And he vowed to galvanize the big support amongst the Ethiopians in diaspora and get even some cash.
Yes, the Diaspora Fund.
The Diaspora Fund, that's
expectations
right.
Are very high for his visit. That was Salomon Abatta from VOA's Horn of Africa service. Thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
Officials say a suicide bomber killed up to 8 people during morning prayers today at a mosque in northeast Nigeria. Another 8 people were injured. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but suspicion fell on the Boko Haram terror group. The blast occurred in the Mainari area of Kanduga in Borno State. The attacker was described as a man in his early 20s who blended in with the worshippers before detonating his explosives. It was the latest in a series of attacks that have been blamed on Boko Haram.
A Somali military official says the Al-Shabaab terror group carried out a raid this morning on a Somali military base that included 2 car bombs and a firefight involving 80 to 100 militants. Mokhtar Abdi Mohammed, a unit commander with Somali forces at the Sanguni camp, 50 kilometers north of Kismayo, says 4 soldiers and at least 8 militants were killed. Al-Shabaab claims it overran the base and killed 27 soldiers. Mohammed called Al-Shabaab's claim baseless. Mohammed says commanders knew the attack was coming and the car bombs were destroyed before they could enter the camp. Sanguni is the same camp where an American soldier was killed back by an Al-Shabaab mortar attack last month. It's not clear if any U.S. advisors were there in the latest attack.
French police moved some 450 migrants this morning from a square in Nantes in western France. The migrants, who are originally from Africa, were cleared from a square where they had camped out for a month. Authorities moved everyone to a hall where their paperwork will be processed. Authorities have organized emergency accommodations for most of the migrants. Reporter Catherine Field is following developments and spoke with me about the clearance operation and why it was necessary.
It was in the western French city of Nantes, right in the very center of the city. Police moved in just after dawn and cleared out some 450 migrants. There were quite a few males there. There were quite a few unaccompanied minors and women who were traveling on their own. There were quite a few riot police. 2 brigades of riot police went in and cleared the area. All of the migrants were then taken to a nearby official hall, a facility where authorities had arranged for them to be interviewed by the immigration services as well as officials from housing and social services. Now, it does all seem as this went off relatively smoothly, but the background to it is a little more complex. The tent city, in fact, had been set up in that area just over a month ago. It grew as police were clearing other areas around the city of Nantes where migrants had been gathering. Some 2 weeks ago, the French state asked local authorities to clear the area. The local mayor said no, said that she was not going to order police to clear these migrants because she had been in contact with the Red Cross, who were looking after these migrants. The state, in fact, had to go to court last week to get a legal ruling that forced the town to clear this particular encampment. So it was quite a backward and forward for the last couple of weeks to get this area cleared.
Where will they be housed?
The problem now is, of course, what they are going to do. Where are they going to house these 450 migrants? Well, the local official, the head of public security, has said that he has found at least 100 places for the most vulnerable, for those who will file claims for asylum. He thinks he will be able to send another 100 of those asylum seekers to other areas of France to have their papers checked. As for the rest, he says he is not sure. He has told reporters that those who have already applied for some sort of status, whether it be protection or asylum status, in other European countries will be returned to those other countries.
And what countries are they mostly from?
Specifically, this group have come through from Italy or Spain.
And their original countries, where are they from?
Their original countries were Sudan and Eritrea. This does seem to match a picture that has been emerging over the summer, as there's been an increasing number of migrants, particularly from sub-Saharan Africa as well as the Sudan. These are the countries where these migrants tend to be coming from and tend to be making their way up, either through Italy or Spain and up here into France.
How did they make their way up into the western part of France?
That is the big mystery. It seems to be, just again, we're looking at the case of people traffickers, smugglers, who are giving these mostly young migrants, as has been said, most of them are males aged under 30, showing them how to get to various places across France. Some of them, of course, came from other areas as they'd been moved on. But essentially, we're always looking at the same, that they arrive in groups and they've been tipped off by people traffickers as to where to go to meet up with other members of their community.
Why did the police clear this particular area?
In their submission to the court, the officials had said it was a matter of health and public order. Where there were these 450-odd migrants camped out and 280 tents, it was said there was only one water tap and one toilet. It said that there were cases of scabies among the people living there. And you have to remember, it is the height of summer here in France, and we've been having a very hot summer. So in this area, you've got temperatures of between 30 and 35 degrees at the height of the day.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
Hundreds of women whose children have been killed or are missing as a result of the separatist war in Cameroon marched in the capital yesterday. The women called for a ceasefire between the government and the armed groups demanding independence for Cameroon's English-speaking regions. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
In the name of Jesus Christ, let your peace reign in this nation. Lord, release the pillar of peace.
These are women who have escaped to Yaoundé from the English-speaking regions of Cameroon, where a war has raged between the military and separatists for the past year. The women are praying and singing for peace to return to the Central African state. Among them is Gladys Array. She says her 24-year-old son has been missing since March after, she says, the military destroyed his motorcycle to get revenge for the killing of a policeman in the southwestern town of Motengene. She says she came out to add her voice to the protest.
We could not miss this opportunity to come and say enough is enough.
Last November, President Paul Biya declared war on people he called secessionists after armed men attacked and killed two policemen in the English-speaking southwestern Cameroon. The government of Cameroon reports that about 200 civilians and more than 100 soldiers and policemen have been killed since then. Ernestine Ba, who fled from the northwestern town of Batibu, says she has lost her husband and two children in the war. She says she is taking part in the march to let the government know that when the military burns houses and businesses, youths are radicalized and escape to the bushes where they join armed fighters.
In old times when I was a child, we used to live in peace. We used to share together. We used to talk what is happening. Whatsoever thing, whatsoever devil that is coming in their heart, please let us stop and make peace. If we humble ourselves, God is going to give us our desire. I plead for peace. I plead for love.
In June, rights group Amnesty International accused Cameroon's government of using unnecessary and excessive force that frequently placed civilians in the path of violence. The government said the report was biased and denied using excessive force. The crisis in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions started out as a protest against marginalization by French speakers who constitute a majority in the Central African country. Some French-speaking Cameroonians joined in on Sunday's march. Marie Menanga, a Yaoundé resident who is housing three people displaced by the fighting, says she wants the government to declare a ceasefire and stop what she describes as a senseless war. She says armed separatists should also drop their weapons.
Nous ne voulons plus voir le sang de nos enfants. Nous disons qu'après 9 mois de travail.
She says no woman who is normal and who kept a pregnancy for 9 months and went through labor pains will want to see her child or children killed in a senseless war. She says everyone should drop their weapons and come out of the bushes because the best gift of life is love and peace. The United Nations reports that about 200,000 people have been internally displaced and tens of thousands have fled across to Nigeria for safety since the fighting began. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib. 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Ethiopia's new prime minister wants to pursue multi-party democracy in the country. A suicide bomber killed up to 8 people during morning prayers today at a mosque in northeast Nigeria. And the Al-Shabaab terror group carried out a raid this morning on a Somali military base. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Rwanda today as he continues his tour of Africa. He has been meeting with Rwandan President Paul Kagame and other officials. Xi arrived yesterday after his state visit to Senegal, his first trip to a West African nation. In Dakar, he and Senegalese President Macky Sall pledged to strengthen ties between China and Africa. Sall said he welcomed China's support for his country's economic development. The Chinese leader goes from Rwanda to South Africa, where he will attend the summit of the so-called BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. He'll also make a stop in Mauritius before heading home.
About 40% of Zimbabweans are estimated to regularly use the internet, and many of them are on social media platforms such as WhatsApp, Twitter, and Instagram. Young Zimbabweans, who are 60% of the population, make up a large share of those online. With Zimbabwe's election next week, new media is playing a considerable role in spreading information, especially in urban areas. Adi Gondo in Bulawayo gives us more on how new media is being used by politicians and voters in civic engagement.
Against this background, the Zimbabwe Center for Media and Information Literacy recently held a summit to explore the potential use of new media in civic engagement. Mangtati Mlochwa is an activist with the Women in Leadership and Development Organization. She explains how she uses new media in her work.
Learned how to embrace social media space to mobilize young people for whatever what I'm up to. So, for instance, the use of WhatsApp as a space of engagement. I run a WhatsApp group. Using this space, the WhatsApp group, we're able to then debate different political issues because the members or the people that are in the WhatsApp group are people from different political parties. So we're able to debate to drive engagement as well.
Zenzile Ndebele is an activist and founder of the Center for Innovation and Technology. He is one of many individuals leading the new media revolution in Zimbabwe and helping to put the spotlight on matters of national interest.
I think I use social media for two main reasons. To get information on what is going on. I think the first thing that I do in the morning when I wake up is go on Twitter to find out the news from main news. I also use social media to create awareness on issues to do with could be human rights, could be politics, could be things that are happening. If I go around, I see something, I take a photo and I tweet about it. So basically I use social media to create awareness, to inform people on what is going on, to complain and probably sometimes to just make people aware that there's something that is happening. But also I use social media to mobilize an opinion, to mobilize resources and all those kind of things.
One of the innovative platforms using social media for civic engagement is run by a young activist called Munya Dodo, otherwise known as Munya Blogo. He runs the platform Open Pali.
We try to hold our parliamentarians to account. We try to aggregate information from parliament to young people using social media. Open Parliament is an open data project, so we aggregate information that comes from parliament. We live tweet parliament sessions, portfolio committee hearings. We live stream them to our community and allow young people access into the corridors of power and give them full access to what ordinary people or what politicians get up to when they're in parliament. It allows them to participate vicariously through social media.
One of the politicians using social media is the mayor of Mashingo, Hubert Fidze. He is a member of the opposition MDC Alliance and also a winner of the Communicator of the Year Award for his effort in engaging his constituents. He shares his experiences using social media.
New media as it came has actually assisted me in engaging and dealing with the issues of service delivery with my residents in a way that we can interact anytime freely. Like in my case, I'm almost 200 WhatsApp groups, so which are coming from the various groups of communities, be they the communities in general, churches, artists, schools, etc., etc. So what they simply do is they relay their issues to the WhatsApp groups, then I pick up from there, then work out on the problems that could have been.
Social media has its downside, including the potential to spread fake news or to become a nuisance for some subscribers. But observers in Africa are watching to see if the new platforms will boost civic engagement and create new models for facilitating social dialogue. That's especially the case in Zimbabwe, which is trying to reform its political system in an era of rapidly growing internet usage. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, host Shaka Sali broadcasts live from Harare, Zimbabwe, as voters prepare for the presidential election on July 30th. The Voice of America and the Zim Papers television network team up to present a presidential debate.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.